Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show, steering the good ship cinema through choppy autumn waters. The forecast is stormy and troubles are brewing, but hopefully with the help of my hardy crew members, we'll avoid the rocks and bring the cargo safely back home. Films to starboard on this week's show. James Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus take a second chance on love in Nicole Holofcener's Enough Said. And the babies have been swapped in the baby swap heartwarmer, Like Father, Like Son. But we begin our journey in the company of Tom Hanks as Captain Phillips, the grizzled merchant seaman whose trip around the Horn of Africa is about to take a perilous turn for the worst. The film is based on fact and directed by Paul Greengrass, who arrived back on dry land just in time to talk to The Guardian's Catherine Shord.
Alabama, this is your final warning!
Stop the ship!
We are men taking a feeding!
Shots fired!
Hit the hoses!
Good crime stories, you see both, don't you? You see the sort of moral clarity of crime and punishment, but the moral ambiguity of the landscape that crime and punishment takes place within, you know, and that's never more clear when you think of, you know, four young men from the beaches of Somalia coming out and attacking a huge container ship, because you're bound to ask, on the one hand, you see very clearly that it's ruthless and brutal and, you know, they're willing to stop at nothing, but you also see that they're, you know, they're four desperate young men with nothing to lose.
Four pirates on board. Four pirates coming towards us down the main deck.
Lock down the bridge.
Yeah.
Listen up. We have been boarded by four armed pirates. You know the drill.
We stay hidden no matter what. I don't want any hostages.
If you've got to see, it's a calling. It is a calling. They're sort of very particular types of people. But you do face danger. I mean, ships sink all the time. You know, you've got weather and fire, and you know, you can't just call the police if you've got a problem. And, of course, piracy is as old as seafaring. I loved all that because it sort of, it felt eternal in a way, but also strongly contemporary. So it definitely gave me a rich sense of the sort of world that these people live in.
There's got to be something other than kidnapping people.
Maybe in America.
Joining me now is the Guardian film critic Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shord. Catherine, it's a story that's obviously been kind of ripped from the headlines, but does that automatically make it a good dramatic film?
No, I think what makes it that is Paul Greengrass and his treatment of it. What they've done is, I mean, Captain Phillips' own book is very preoccupied with his wife, who's worried back home, and Greengrass just cuts all that out. You don't see that at all. And what he puts in is the experience of the Somali pirates just leading up to the hijacking. So it's absolutely Greengrassed up, and that's what makes it so exciting. And it's, you know, you sort of know the outcome. You know, most people know that Captain Phillips wrote this book about it, and thus they can probably guess that he doesn't die horribly. And yet it does sustain the film on the tension that he might, rather amazingly, or, you know, how will he get out of it at least. And it's pure Greengrass kind of editing, quick whip-crack kind of stuff. It was fantastically exciting. You just absolutely can't stop being absolutely gripped by it. I loved it, absolutely loved it.
Peter, in other hands, this would probably be the story of a good, decent, hardy American at the prey of murderous outside forces. But Greengrass does sort of widen the canvas, doesn't he?
Yes, I wonder how Ron Howard would have done it. I think he would have put the wife back in a big way. And it would have been Apollo 13 all over again. I think it plays to Greengrass's strengths. I think he's brilliant at the ordeal aspect of it, that kind of, kind of clenched fist, white knuckle stuff at the very beginning when you realise this awful thing is about to happen. I think it's better than the Bourne sort of stuff that Greengrass has yeah. done. Yeah, I think this is more like his United 93 or his Bloody Sunday, the much more reality stuff that he does. There's already been, of course, an argument about the verity of this particular story. Some of the crew say that that Captain Phillips was not, in fact, the Tom Hanks nice guy that he's represented here, that he was not as clever, not as heroic, and not as all-round great as was represented here. But I think it's, from what I understand, I think that it is a very honest attempt by Greengrass to try to balance it out with the experience of the Somali pirates. Mm. It's like a war movie, except we're not in wartime. It's very much a 9/11 movie in some ways. There is it is a quasi 9/11 event, only with a happy ending. I also think that it's reaching back to the USS Cole in 2000. I think it touches memories of that as well.
Well, it's a kind of globalised disaster, yes. isn't it? There's yes. a sense that everybody is victims of one stripe or another.
Yes,
here.
I mean, the very important thing is when the attacker Muse says that he's not Al Qaeda. All this is about is business. Mm. But that isn't to say it's not ideological. Of course, it's fantastically ideological. We're all about the globalization and sea routes. And if we want to sell goods into these markets, and if we want to import goods whose manufacture we've outsourced to cheap labor, then we can't transport the stuff by air. We have to do it by sea, and we have to go through these badlands. So it's about something very contemporary and rather compelling.
What do you think of Hanks's performance? It's been a while since his last Oscar, but presumably he's in the game again for this.
Yeah, although I think there's also the danger that he'll knock himself out of the running with his turn in Saving Mr. Banks as well, so that may not turn out. I mean, actually, I think it's an interesting thing because although, you know, he's seen to be heroic, he's not the most lovable captain ever. He's not actually that sort of cuddly. And it's rather a withheld performance. Mm. You don't really get into him, and that's what makes the last 5 or 10 minutes quite so emotional, quite so overwhelming, and quite so similar, actually, to 12 Years a Slave. It's got a very, very similar ending and release. It's very, very interesting comparison there, I think. Or very sort of... it's very interesting.
We can't argue because we haven't seen 12 Years a Slave.
Anyway.
So you've really got the jump on us.
Sorry.
This is a big power trip by you this week.
I'm the captain. I do sort of think, although, you know, Greengrass's big thing with this is the veracity. You read the production notes, the word veracity appears about 50 billion times. The fact is that the Somali pirates are criminals, and there's no sort of getting away from the fact that they are sort of criminals, and at least one of them is seen in a sort of fairly kind of jabbering, naked gun-ish sort of way, and you just can't get away from that. And the fact is, because Paul Greengrass is quite so conscientious, you think it's probably like that.
Yeah, I mean, I came to it with my kind of cringing liberal PC antennae twitching. I thought, oh my God, how are they going to represent them? Mm. I think the awful thing to do would be to try to make them ultra, ultra civilized and Guardian reading, and to give them an awful equivalent moment. They came quite close to the equivalent moment, to make them like sort of Jack Hawkins and the U-boat commander. They sort of respect each other in the end. And fortunately, Greengrass doesn't do that. And I think we can be too kind of fastidious about how they are representative, how they're represented. I don't think they're represented badly.
Let him go.
Let him go.
Hey.
Go. Send the captain out.
All right, now that handle, see? You're going to want to move that up and down. You got to pump it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you drop.
Cap, come on out. Cap. Cap, what's going on in there?
Just you know, however many times it takes, pump it, and you're in the water, and off you go.
Tom Hanks battling the pirates in The Excellent Captain Phillips. We now turn to an altogether different kind of life crisis in the Japanese drama Like Father, Like Son. It's a kind of modern-day riff on The Prince and the Pauper, and it looks like this.
それで会ったのか。自分の子にだよ、本当の。会いましたよ。
似てたか、お前に。 似てたんだろう。
Hirokazu Koreeda spins the tale of two little boys, one born to a sterile hothouse environment, the other to slovenly warmth. But there was a mix-up at the hospital, and now what's to be done?
Ika, chida. Hito mo uma to onaji de chi ga daiji nan da. Kore kara dondon sono ko wa omae ni nite kuru so. Keita wa gyaku ni dondon sono 相手の親に似ていくんだ。早く子供は交換して二度と相手の家族とは会わないことだな。
Peter, Koreeda Hirokazu has already given me one of my favourite films of the year with I Wish. Can yes. can he give me two?
I'm not sure that he can. I'm put in a very difficult position with this. I've been a cheerleader for Koreeda in my own humble way for years since I saw his Afterlife, his breakthrough feature back in the day, back in 98 or 99. This is a very, very intelligent, beautifully acted film. It's made with all the subtlety and intelligence and integrity that we have come to expect of this director. But I don't think it's nearly as good as I Wish. It doesn't have the complexity of I Wish. It's similar to I Wish in many ways, the idea of the two sundered boys living this kind of looking glass existence and looking into each other's worlds. But I had a problem with this, basically. Basically, this is all about one dad, who is the uptight salaryman called Ryo. He's all focused on his job. He needs to learn a life lesson. Very clearly, this whole experience, the baby swap experience, is going to set him on his emotional journey, and he needs that emotional journey. Mm. But how about the other guy? The other guy, whose name is Yudai, he's virtually a saint. I mean, he's like an earth daddy figure.
He's a bit of a slacker, isn't he?
Yes, he's a slacker, but that's why he's such a saint. You know, we're not in any way invited to condemn that. We think it's marvellous. We see him on two separate occasions playing with his kids in a soft play centre. Mm. Two separate scenes where he does that. Two separate scenes where uptight Ryo fails to do that. We see Ryo's journey, but we don't see his. How does he feel?
Catherine was talking about the veracity in Captain Phillips. I wondered about the veracity of this story. Would they do the thing where they exchange the kids for weekends to see how they get on? It all felt a little bit stage managed.
I wonder. I honestly don't know. I mean, this is something which I kind of know about in literature, but not in real life. Mm. I mean, this has happened in real life. Famously, it has happened. I think there's a case where George Bernard Shaw took an interest in a real life case. Mark Twain has written about it. Salman Rushdie, of course, Midnight's Children. Koreeda himself has said that he was inspired by becoming a father. And that's what led him to this idea. He may have read about it in the newspapers or something like that. And also, I think that Japanese society, particularly for the high achievers like Koreeda himself, he may look at other dads and other people thinking, what would it be like if I was in their shoes? What would it be like if I hadn't worked so hard all my life? What have I sacrificed? And he himself has sacrificed possibly a good deal to become a director of such high status, which he is now. I mean, he's virtually a kind of world cinema master now after so many years of having great success at Cannes. And of course, he won the jury prize for this film this year. And I wonder if he, as one of the great white collar class of Japan, if he is very close to the salaryman figure.
I did really like this. All the way through, though, I was thinking, I can just imagine the sort of terrible American remake.
Yes.
With kind of Steve Carell and Seth Rogen kind of doing it over
again. I can imagine
again.
John C. Reilly playing the slacker. I can imagine Bradley Cooper playing the uptight guy very easily. But then, and the whole thing turns into Kramer versus Kramer versus Kramer versus Kramer. I think if this movie was being spoken in English, I wonder if it wouldn't have had a slightly cooler critical response, because it is a bit Americanized.
High concept. It's almost the definition of high concept.
Yeah, it is as high concept as you like, and it is rather American, to be honest with you. Whereas, I Wish it was completely different from Hollywood, utterly different. I can imagine this being remade very easily.
Keta.
ケータのこと大好きだって言ってたから。パパより。パパよりもだ。そしたらみんなで写真撮ろうか。はい。これで。
Nature versus nurture in Like Father, Like Son. Just time for one more film before we pull into port. Enough Said is an autumn years rom-com starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus and the late James Gandolfini. They're getting old, they've both been burned, but the heart is resilient and hope springs eternal.
So how long have you been divorced?
About 4 years.
Mm. It wasn't mutual?
Not really, no.
Mm-hmm. Can I have her number, please?
Of course.
Can you imagine the time that that would save?
We should all just put a sign on our necks and write down what's wrong with us. Get it all out there.
The one out of Seinfeld meets the boss from The Sopranos in The Joyous Enough Said, a portrait of lonely hearts and trailing baggage. It's one of the last films Gandolfini completed before his death back in June. And it may just be one of his best.
Does your daughter live with you?
Half the time. It aggravates her sometimes, but the thing is, she and her mother are very, very neat.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, their favorite store is that, I don't know, what is it? It's the store with all the empty boxes in the storage.
Oh, the container store?
Yes, yes, the container store. The store that sells crap, so you can put your crap in so you can go out and buy some more crap.
Catherine, James Gandolfini is such a beloved presence that there's an inevitable temptation to give kind of too much love to his final screen role. Is that a danger with Enough Said or not?
I think it's a danger. I don't think it's a problem. I think the thing about Enough Said is that this is a conscious effort by the director to make a more mainstream film. The studio wanted to make a movie with her, but they wanted it more mainstream. And the way that that manifests itself in the film is that it has this very cute hook, this nearly Shakespearean conceit, and it has these two TV stars, and also it's not so much of a women's picture as her other films. And so the two men in it, of which James Gandolfini is obviously the key one, are nice. They are the sympathetic people, and the women are the difficult ones. And it's a rom-com. It's a rom-com that men will go and see and will enjoy and will sympathise with the characters. And, you know, James Gandolfini is wonderful in it, and it's a wonderful film. But the fact is that that his character is much more important in it than a man has ever been before in a Nicole Hofferson film.
Peter, what did you think of it?
I loved it, and I didn't expect to love it. I think that it's a revelation to me. I think both Gandolfini and Julia Louis-Dreyfus were really taking it to the next level. I thought they really had, especially Gandolfini. I thought, however much I kind of loved him, I thought that basically Tony Soprano is what he did, and he could vary it and bring it down or bring it up, and that's all he could do. And that was great in some movies, like Killing Them Softly. It was great, but he genuinely was different. For example, his mannerism of breathing heavily through his nose, a slightly De Niro-esque mannerism. I thought, well, he's just stuck with it. It's like his twitch or something. He's stuck with it. But Holofcina managed to get him to stop doing it and rather cleverly alluded to it in another scene. The Julia Louis-Dreyfus asks him about it, and he said, I broke my nose a couple of times. But we never see him actually doing it. She's brilliant in it. I thought she had that. She had that kind of Elaine Benes Seinfeldian thing, but she took it up and gave it a new complexity. And I mean this as the highest possible compliment. Larry David or Jerry Seinfeld would have been proud to have written it, because it's really funny and clever. And there are lots of interesting, funny little quirks which are very Seinfeldian.
Catherine, is there a mileage in this kind of film? Is this the rom-tom kind of growing up and finding a new, more mature, shall we say, audience?
To some extent, I think this idea of the baggage that one brings with one in a later life relationship hasn't quite been explored in the same way, and I think that was presumably the intention in doing it. The interesting thing about it is, of course, that she has this experience of the first flush of a new romance, although it's not quite a flush because she's uncertain about it, because she's turned off by his weight and stuff like that. But also she has this sense of, you know, all the flaws about him, which are why his ex-wife fell out of love with him. There's revealing things about the stepchildren and all that. All that's a bit familiar. I mean, it's not like we've never seen that. I think what makes this sparkle is the script and the performances. It's not really the sort of later life thing. I don't think one should bracket it with those kind of films, to be honest.
It's got to this age where I think it's wrong to call it a rom-com. I think, for good or ill, the rom-com has evolved as its own rather ghastly genre, a kind of machine tool genre about young women in New York or conceivably Los Angeles finding love, and it's completely artificial and plastic and it follows its own rules. This is just more like, I don't know, it's an awful word, dramedy. I mean, that's awful and unsatisfactory on its own, in its own way. But it's, I think it's now wrong to call it a rom-com or even a romantic comedy, because that just brings in too many...
Too much baggage.
Awful
baggage. That's the real baggage.
Yeah, that's the real baggage of romantic comedy. Or even saying women's picture seems to be wrong, because, as Catherine rightly says, you know, it's about James Gandolfini as much as about her. And it's about also the first flush of finding a new friend. That's interesting. Of what happens in later life when you genuinely do make a new friend. A friend of your, she is friendly with the Catherine Keener character, who is rather absurdly a poet, and she's a masseuse or a physical therapist. She is somebody who massages her for a living, and they genuinely become friends. And it's interesting, you know, what is the cutoff year in our lives for making a new friend? Is it, you know, 12, or is it 18 or 21? How old do you have to be before you realise you'll never make a friend ever again?
Oh, God, Peter, that's awful. It's just depressing.
It's awful, but that's what the movie is about as well. It's a rather clever idea.
I love that. I loved how when they're starting their friendship and Catherine Keener gives her a bunch of chervil, like a bunch of flowers almost, and Dreyfus is very, you know, says, oh, thank you so much. That sort of preciousness of female friendship sometimes. And then she's sort of saying on the phone to Toni Collette, what the hell is chervil? What do I do with this? It's great. I love that. I love that because it's like there's two romances. It's absolutely like she's cheating on each of them with the other. And that was really interesting, that kind of girl crush aspect.
They ever hit on you?
Sometimes, yeah. I can give you a massage sometime if you want.
I think I might like that. But I would definitely hit on you.
Well, that might be okay.
Really? You want a kiss?
Yeah.
Gandolfini and Dreyfus in Enough Said, and that, of course, is the perfect film to wrap things up on. If only the studio would always script an outro like that. That's Enough Said from me, from Peter, and from Catherine too. Thanks for watching. See you next week.